start with an assumption, and this is it. All people choose better unless something stronger is in play. Now, an assumption in academia is something that you put out there. It's a hypothesis, and then you test it. So we're going to test it a little bit this morning. With something better, I mean the things of God, whatever that may be or may look like. It's the good seed of the kingdom that comes into places, spaces, people, and environments, communities even. It's what Scripture calls those things that give life, those things that creates completeness, wholeness, and well-being. Those things that make it better, the good things of the kingdom. We know when we look at the Bible, when we look at the life of Jesus, the way of living that Jesus showed in the Bible depicted is the better way. We know it works. We can see it all over our world where these principles and ways of living are upheld. It changes lives. It brings life and it changes lives. We know from observation and from personal experience that when God gets inside and changes us from the inside out, you know, it's so much better. Not necessarily easier. That's a different thing. So most people confuse, or most of us confuse better with easier. No, it's not the same thing. Better actually means sometimes more effort to stay on that path. So I think what happens is when the seed takes root, it doesn't only make me feel spiritual, which is the other thing we often think. It produces a harvest that blesses in us, through us to others, and then around us into this world. So what does that look like? In summary, if it happens in us, the harvest forms us to look like Jesus and to act like Jesus in whatever context we are. It changes us from the inside out to look like Jesus. Now, if you think about the side there, you know, the wheat, I think it is, field of wheat, or is that corn or wheat? I think it's wheat, yeah. The soil there looks bare without the wheat on it. But then when the seed of God comes in, it actually transforms something. It makes it look and act in a very different, it changes the nature of it. So that's what happens when God comes into us and things start to change from the inside out. Our life becomes something that produces something that nourishes other people and that brings life to them as well. But not only to them, it also happens to us. That then works through us in an amazing way. It's a powerful thing. Through us, the harvest for others is love that builds other people up. You know, the seed actually always has love in its core. And the seed that God sows into us is by love, in love, and love itself. And it's that love that becomes so compelling that it wells up and it changes us from the inside out. Talk about new creation and all of that in theology. Around us, the harvest of the world is kingdom impact. It is making the world a better place. Now, that may look so different in so many different contexts, but it's making it better in whatever way is good and godly in the context that God has planted. So if the seed is this good, why is it true that it often does not produce a harvest? Why? The problem is not the seed. The problem is not that God is a little bit frugal with seed sowing. We've heard that in the previous sermons. God dispenses the seed freely everywhere all the time. This problem is not the seed. Problem is with the soil. And that's what we are going to focus on. What's the issues with the soil? But first, let me talk a little bit more about this. There's something stronger that plays in us kind of deal. So there is an equation. I call it the something stronger equation. God's good seed on the one hand versus that whatever is stronger in us. And can you see there that's always a choice. That's always something in play in us that we're going to have to deal with. So think of this equation as something that runs underneath every one of our choices. Every choice we ever make, there's this equation working under the surface. God's good seed versus a lack of understanding on the other side, or maybe it's comfort, Maybe it's this whole thing of habit. And if you don't yet understand how habit forming works, habits are quite interesting. The more frequently you do something, the more emotional impact it has, and the more sensory involvement it has, the quicker a habit forms. So they say anything from 19 to 42 days is usually how quickly a habit forms. Let me quickly explain that. It's a sidetrack, but I'll do that very quickly. So if I want to pick up this iPad, my brain has to now somewhere generate a thought that says, pick up iPad. It has to travel through my brain, all these neural pathways. And then it basically, the thought comes down, and then it comes to a place where there's a gap in my brain. And now it has 100 to 600 new neural pathways, or other paths that it can now follow. But it has to make a very quick decision in nanoseconds. Okay, where does the message now have to continue to eventually get to my hand and my nervous system so that I pick up the iPad? So now the brain decides, oh, yeah, it's that one. So, but there's a gap. So in order to carry the message over, it uses what we call neurotransmitters. You know, chemical things like dopamine and lithium and all kinds of things like that. So now the message gets onto this ferry and it crosses the river, this gap, and it gets to this neural pathway and then eventually it travels further. And this happens a few times in the brain and eventually it gets to my hand. Now, my brain then goes, oh, you want to pick up the iPad frequently now. So you're using this neural pathway a lot. This ferry system is too slow. So then the brain physically does this. It's a physical hardwiring of a thing into my brain. The brain then says, okay, let me connect these two neural pathways. Let me build a bridge. It's like a protein sheath that happens in the brain. Now it builds this bridge. Okay, wow, this is better travel. Then the brain goes, wait a minute, man, you really like doing this iPad thing, and you do it frequently, and every time you touch the iPad, you can feel it. That feels nice. You know, there's a weight to this thing. So I need to make it even better for you and quicker for you to travel this neural pathway. So let this dirt road that we are traveling on, let me make that a bitumen road. And it thickens out the neural pathway in my brain. And then it says, well, even that is not fast enough. I need an autobahn. You know, think Germany. And it thickens out the neural pathway. And that's how habits form. The more emotion is involved, if you really like it, it happens quicker. The more senses, and we're not just talking about the five senses, we're talking about the nine senses. You can look it up on Google. Proprioception and all of those things as well involved. Let me not get distracted. But anyway, it's very interesting. Just understand how habits form. Now, the interesting thing, we're coming to that a little bit later on. An interesting thing with habits is you cannot kill habits if you have them. But you can atrophy them. You can starve them. And you do that usually by establishing another neural pathway in their place and then feeding this one and not the old one. That's how these things die. I'll say a little bit about it later as well. Let's continue on before I get too distracted. Of course, nothing is stronger than God in reality. We know that. Nothing is really stronger than God. But deep down, we can think and act as if these other things are stronger than the good seed of God. And then it has that effect on our lives. And then the seed keeps landing, but it doesn't penetrate, it doesn't root, and it doesn't mature. And we'll come back to the maturity thing a little bit later. Sometimes we don't even realize why. We just know parts of my life, there's just no harvest there. Maybe in that part there's a bit of harvest, but this part of my life is just dry, barren soil. There's nothing happening there. And we don't fully understand why. Why is it that parts of my life can have, but this part, nothing? Why? Let's read the words of Jesus in Matthew 13 again to help us to break this open a little bit in terms of an answer. So this is the Message translation, which I don't think you've seen yet. And in this text, often I would say, don't read the Message because it will take you on all kinds of rabbit holes and you know, don't do that. But in this case, I think the translation is actually quite helpful. So what do you make of this? Ooh, love that. Jesus starts this whole deal and he says, what do you make of this? I mean, see how much Jesus makes of our choices right at the outset here? So Jesus actually starts this message and this story, this parable, and he says, when you hear this, it's in your hands what you make of it. Your choice. Oof, man, that's responsibility there. What do you make of this? A farmer planted seed. As he scattered the seed, did I put that up? Not yet. Ooh, man, I need to stay with this thing. I'm so excited. Anyway, as he scattered the seed, some of it fell on the road and the birds ate it. Some fell in the gravel. It sprouted quickly, but it didn't put down roots. So when the sun came up, it withered just as quickly. Some fell in the weeds. It came up. It was strangled by the weeds. Some fell on good earth and produced a harvest behind his wildest dreams. I love that last piece. Behind his wildest dreams. What does that actually mean? We'll get back to that in a moment. The disciples eventually react to this whole deal. They go, wait a minute, Jesus, what's happening here? What's happening here? And then they ask this. So I'll go on with the text a little bit. Just read it with me and then I'll react to it. The disciples came up. This is now just after he told the story. They came up and they asked, why do you tell stories? He replied, you, disciples, you've been given insight into God's kingdom. You know how it works. Not everybody has this gift being me, Jesus, who are in your midst, whom you can see and observe. You can see how kingdom living looks like, what it looks like. Whenever somebody has a ready heart for this, and not everybody has this gift, but whenever somebody has a ready heart for this, the insights and understandings flow freely. Whoa, okay. So Lord, you're actually saying whenever that happens, and if we sit in the kitchen with you around the table and you share with us and we're in a conversation with you about this, your wisdom and insights and better way just flows into us and it becomes ours. Yeah. Whoa, that's almost like a transference kind of deal that is miraculous. And I think that's how God intends it to be. The thing that makes it not so is something in us that blocks it. And he actually goes on and he says a little bit about that. That's why I tell stories, to create readiness, to nudge the people towards a welcome awakening. Wow. Okay. Lord, are you saying I'm asleep? Yes, perhaps, in parts of your life at least. Gee, Lord, I don't really like to hear that. That's a bit offensive. Come back to that. In their present state, they can stare till doomsday and not see it. Listen till they blew in the face and not get it. I don't want Isaiah. Now he's quoting Isaiah 6, verse 9 and 10. He says, I don't want Isaiah's forecast repeated all over again. And he says this, your ears are open, but you don't hear a thing. Your eyes are awake, but you don't see a thing. The people are stupid. Oof, man, I'm not sure what to make of that part of this translation. But that's what it says. They stick their fingers in their ears so they don't have to listen. They screw their eyes shut so they won't have to look. So they won't have to deal with me face to face and let me heal them. What the heck is going on in this text? This is the interlude. This is the in-between piece. Because just after this, Jesus now unpacks the parable and he explains it. This is a very offensive piece of scripture. Very offensive. It's a reality check. It's brutal. Unfortunately, experience tells us this is true. You can see it. I can see it in my own life at times. So this is a brutal honesty moment. Where are you with this? Where am I with this morning? So this is what happens. Let me demonstrate. We go and sit and then we do this. We put in a humongous amount of effort just to make sure we don't hear what God has to say. Or see what he has to show. Why? Because the moment I see it and the moment I hear it, I have no more excuses left. And then I can no longer continue doing wrong or perpetuate brokenness in peace. It's a huge thing. Lord, I really don't want to see your revelation because if I see it, I can no longer plead ignorance. Man, and ignorance, really, Lord, you don't understand. It's really bliss. It really is bliss. And Lord, just by the way, that text is offensive. That text is offensive. I really don't want to listen to this thing. So Jesus puts this right smack in the middle of this whole thing about the seed, and he says, man, the seed, there's nothing wrong with the seed. The issue is with the soil. And let's talk about the soil, but first understand how we often react to these things. The seed is there, it comes in, but it doesn't penetrate. Because why? That's what we do. I do it. I'll own it. I do it. There's definitely times when I do it. Man. I think it's the most challenging part of this whole parable. By the way, I wrote a 2-page thing that is a handout. It's drifting here somewhere. So I think when you leave, if you want to take a 2-piece handout, just a little bit of a further unpacking on this, because we're going to go into this specific part too deeply. But feel free to read it and let God speak to you out of it if you want to. It's the most challenging. Are we ready to hear and take it in, or are we trying to do all kinds of stupid, crazy things so that we don't have to hear or don't have to see? That's a reality check. So where are we standing this morning with it? So there was this missionary in Amsterdam, Floyd McClung. Big dude. I mean, he was 6'6", really solid. Let's put it that way. Missionary in Amsterdam, red light district. And he had this habit, he wrote about it in his book, and he had this habit, he would walk up to people and say, can I speak to you about Jesus? He says 9 out of 10 times people would be open to it, and then they have a conversation. But there's always those few that say, no, I'm not interested. And he said, okay, no, that's fine, you're obviously not ready for it. He says, when he said they're not ready for it, that bothered them. That bothered them so much that some of them chased after him and said, what do you mean I'm not ready for it? You can imagine what happens there. But yeah, there's people who try to avoid. God's actually saying this morning, are you ready for it? You've heard all these sermons over the last few weeks. Are you ready for it? The seed is there. You understand the power of the seed. Are you ready for it? He's saying that to me. Are you ready for it? So reality check, ready and open or avoiding and closed off? Our choice, either way, it's us. What's more, I think this is the undertone. And once again, I'm missing all my... Oh, no, I think I'm okay. I think this is the undertone to this whole deal. What captivates us activates us. See how close those two words are together? What captivates us actually activates us. What are we caught up in? There's another saying around this. We become what we behold. What are we actually looking at? What are we actually playing with all the time? Sometimes speak with students at Tabor, and they would say, you know, in whiteboard sessions, in private, in my office, they come and they say, I'm dealing with a number of things. Pray with me. Talk to me. You know, especially the students who go on president's hikes and things like that with me, who get to know you a little bit better. They start to trust. And then they end up in this one-on-one session. And some of them would say, man, yeah, I play with porn a lot. But it's not a problem because it's not hurting anybody. Yeah, but don't you know that it makes your heart a hardened place that seed cannot penetrate? So you wonder why there's a barren field in your life? It's because the scorching hot sun of these things is baking it into dirt, hard soil. And that's the kind of soil that God eventually has to take a sledgehammer or a plow to. Otherwise, nothing breaks through. So yeah, it's not hurting anybody. It's not true. It's actually hurting everybody because the harvest is not there. That piece of land in your life that could feed a lot of people around you, but or you also, is now barren. I'm worrying about things. Let's talk about something a little bit more innocent than porn. I'm worrying about things all the time. But it's only worry. Everybody is supposed to worry because we need to look out for ourselves and, you know, think ahead and all of that. Well, I think the Bible is quite clear about worry. Stay away. Because worry is anti-trust in God. And it has the same effect. It makes the soil hard. The parable goes on, and I'll just quickly read that with you as well. Study the story, says the message. Now, it's interesting. Study it. Normally, study is something we have to do, and it's about putting in the effort to really get to it, you know. When anyone hears news of the kingdom and doesn't take it in, news of the kingdom, like this preach, like the ones before, you know, there's so many good messages that comes out of this space. It remains on the surface. And so the evil one comes along and he plucks it right out of that person's heart. This is the seed that farmers scatters on the road. My brackets, soil type one. I'll come back to that. The seed cast in the gravel, the rocky ground, this is the person who hears and instantly responds with enthusiasm. Ooh, that is nice. I like this. I like this whole idea of the better life. Don't like the idea of the effort about it, but let's put that aside for a moment. A better life. Yeah, I like that. Instantly responds with enthusiasm, but there is no soil of character. What the heck is this character thing? It's basically backbone to do the thing that is the right and the good thing to do consistently. Somebody once explained it to me as, it's the things you do when your mother is not looking. I'm not sure whether that's right. But it's backbone. It's backbone. Example, think of Joseph in the Bible. Joseph sees the dream when he's a teenager, sees those dreams. Man, he's cocky. He's a bit of a gossip. He has all kinds of character issues. He blabbers to his brothers. He tries to dominate it over them. They put him in the pit and so on. God uses those experiences to build his character, because by the time that the dream unfolds, now Joseph has enough character to carry it. If that came true earlier in his life, it would have crushed him. It would have broken him. He was not ready for it. Don't avoid these exercises and these things God put across our path to build our character, because God has greater things in play, greater things in mind for us. But we need to be able to carry it. We need to strengthen for it. And see how much is in this whole thing. And then he goes on. Okay, that's a gravel. So when the emotions water off and some difficulty arrives, there's nothing to show for it. The seed cast in the weeds is the person who hears the kingdom news. But weeds of worry and delusions about getting more and wanting everything under the sun, entitlement is the word we use in our world nowadays. Getting more and wanting everything, what was heard, and nothing comes of it. And then the seed cast on good earth is the person who hears and takes in the news and then produces a harvest beyond his wildest dreams. There's that thing again. What is this thing about beyond his wildest dreams? If you go further on in the passage, we're not going to read it today. Jesus uses story upon story upon story to unpack this original story that he's busy with. He says, it's like leaven in bread. You see how that whole deal works? So how much yield does leaven in bread produce? Hard to calculate, because it actually changes the very nature of the bread. So that's the kind of yield that is better than 100-fold. It's not just a good harvest. It's a harvest that changes the life of the thing that it's in from the inside out. That's leaven. What about mustard seed? Mustard seed is, oh my goodness. Dan spoke about it last Sunday brilliantly, by the way. Really appreciated that sermon. That was fantastic. Listen to it. Incredible. I actually listened to it twice. I liked it that much. Amazing. A lot to learn in there. So this thing about the mustard seed. A mustard seed, 2 millimeters in diameter, more or less, you know, the black mustard seed. And then that seed, when the plant grows to maturity, which is God's idea for us, grow into spiritual maturity like Christ. When a mature plant, roughly 5 meters tall, produces seed, it produces 2,000 to 10,000 seeds per year. So now we're now no longer talking about a 100-fold harvest, we're talking about a 10K-fold harvest, potentially. That's the mustard seed idea. What, Lord, hold on, that the math doesn't work. No, it actually does. I mean, 30-fold harvest is what you can expect when you plant wheat, more or less in our time and day. 60-fold is what you can get when you plant rice. 100-fold is what you get when you plant maize. That's more or less the yield ratios nowadays. But that's not the end of it, my son, my daughter. What I have in mind for you is a miraculous harvest in and through your life, 10K plus, like a mustard seed. Wow, Lord, I cannot even imagine that. Stay with me, abide in me, John 15, and this will start happening. You don't know how, but it will start happening. Something amazing breaks. You see it in people's lives. How is it that some people are ministering through their life to such an incredible extent, wherever they go, things just change? Something just breaks through. Why? Because it's as if they are these 10K miraculous harvest kind of people wherever they go. It just happens. That's real harvest. So pause for this for a moment. The kicker is this. Jesus is implying that this is what a kingdom life in relationship with God can look like. It can produce as a harvest. Not 100-fold only, more. Okay then. Let's change it up a little bit. Because we've been going into heavy stuff for a while now. I'm going to change it up slightly. And I'm going to give us a test to do. So the moment I know we're students from experience, when we hear the word test, we get an internal anaphylactic reaction. You don't have to have that. You cannot fail this test. And even if you think you've personally failed it, we can help you afterwards. Pass it. It's not that kind of test. But it is a very deep test. So remember what I talked about, that inner room, soundproof room with God experience at the beginning? This is the moment to go there. Inner room with God. This is a personal test. It's not a thing to discuss with anybody else unless you really want to afterwards. You feel free to do that. But it's your testimony to plow with if something breaks open here for you. I'm going to ask 5 questions. I'm going to put them up one by one. And then I'll read through them slowly. You have to make choices with each of them. And it's a soil test. What's happening in our life in terms of soil right now? What's happening? It's a new test. I've never seen this thing before, so we're trying it today on you. If you think it doesn't work, I'll rethink the whole deal, see how it goes. It helps us with 2 things. It helps us to identify what's the dominant soil type in my life right now. Where am I actually sitting for most of my life? Because I don't think any person is only one soil type. I think we probably have all 4 soil types in us. The idea is to get to the place where we can have good soil for most, if not every part of our life. That is the Christian journey, I believe. God wants us to be at that point, and he's working with us to that point. The second thing it does is it helps identify the different soil types in different parts of our life. So you can see what's there and what may I do about it. So we're going to unpack that a little bit. So are you ready? Okay, so you're going to have to perhaps make notes if you want to, or otherwise just remember, see how it goes. I'll go as low as I can. So where is it? The soil type. Choose the answer that is most often true for you. Now, I know there's always a few perfectionists in the room. This is not a perfectionist deal. In other words, you don't have to make the answer perfect. What is most often true? Go as good as you can. In other words, after 5 questions, count which letter you chose most. A, B, C, or D. Soil type 1, 2, 3, and 4. That then gives you your current soil profile. It's not an exam. No sharing needed unless you choose to do so. Deep self, honestly required. Feel free to make notes if you need to. So are you ready for this? Question 1. Let's go into it. When God's word challenges me, I dismiss it, explain it away, or it bounces off me quickly. You can see how much honesty would be required with this test. Option B, the rocky soil. I feel inspired in the moment, but it doesn't last into the week. It's a Sunday deal. Option C, thorny ground. I want to respond, but worry or busyness or distraction quickly takes over. Option D, I receive it, I reflect on it, and I take a step of obedience. Do something obedient about it. Make your choice. 10 seconds. Now, either remember your choice or make a note if you need to. Just do it so that the person next to you cannot see it, because you don't want your testimony to go all over the place. Question 2. Let me put that up. Where are we now? Question 2. There it is. In the week after Sunday, or after a spiritual moment, even within the week, option A, I barely think about it again. Option B, I start strong, But then I fade when life gets hard or inconvenient. Option C, I mean to, but the pace and the problems of life crowds it out. Option D, I make space. I pray. I look at scripture about it. I journal about it. I discuss it with other people and I keep going. In other words, I make work of it. Make your choice. Oh, no. Question three, is that, what did I do there? Question four. Did I miss question three somewhere? I think so. I think there's only four. Anyway, your joy. Let's see how it goes. I misnamed them. Right now, what most shapes my decisions? What most shapes my decisions? Habit? Self-protection? Or I've already made up my mind, I don't care what you say. It's that internal passive-aggressive kind of stance. Option B, rocky ground. Feelings and motivations. Man, if I don't feel it, I'm not doing it. If I'm up, I'm in. If I'm down, I drift. Option C, the demands of life, work, money, success, people-pleasing screens. Dot, dot, dot. There's many other options as well. And then option D, good soil. A clear yes to Jesus. His voice and priorities increasingly lead me. It's becoming more and more important every day. Let's go to question five. When I notice failure or even sin, something wrong inside myself, I justify it. I blame. Play the victim is another way to talk about that. I avoid or I numb out. Option B, rocky soil. I feel bad. I promise change, but I don't build anything different. Nothing's happening. Option C, I feel overwhelmed. Too much going on to deal with this properly. I mean, there's other things to attend to. Option D, I repent. I receive God's grace, which is crucial because often we repent, but then don't forgive self. That's important. And take a practical next step with support. And support starting with God's support and empowerment first and foremost. It's not just about other things. So now, count it up. If most of your answers are in category A, it probably means your heart is the kind of soil that is closed, that is habit-hardened, that the word cannot get in. If it's mostly B's, it's rocky soil, shallow roots. Start strong but can't endure the heat. So with a rocky soil, what basically happens, it's gravel all over the place. There's rocks underneath. You even have a layer of soil, but it's so thin, the roots start to go down, but then they run into rocks. They cannot endure the heat of life. The challenges that the Bible, Mark 9 verse 49 says, everybody will be tempted by fire. Do not be misled. The Bible itself says you're going to have struggles and pain and issues in this life. It is guaranteed. Guaranteed. The sun will come, the heat. C, thorny soil, crowded heart. The word is choked out by worry, by wealth, in the pursuit of wealth, by pressure, stress. Any other variety of fear-based emotions. I believe all of those things are actually fear-based emotions. Very interesting how that works. And then most D's, good soil, receptive and cultivated. Fruit or harvest grows over time. The yield potential also increases. Because if you continue to fertilize a field, I remember when I grew up in the maize triangle in South Africa. So I worked during the holidays on farms fertilizing the fields. I made a huge mistake once. I fertilized the field with liquid nitrogen. And I disconnected the hose too quickly and the pump was still going. And it killed off about a hectare of the farmer's maize just like that. So the wrong fertilizer at the wrong time is also not really the idea. God knows what to fertilize when. And that's why it's important to stay with God with us. Let's go on. What's the point of the test? It helps identify dominant soil types. Four soils are not four types of people. They are four categories of things that can be stronger in play in us than God's seed. What's stronger? It's not stronger than God in truth, but stronger in influence, stronger in reflex, stronger in the moment. And this is the news, the good news. The soil can change. So I feel the heaviness that comes with a test like that, because now it's an honesty moment. So just sit in it for a moment. The honesty moment is not to embarrass. It's not God putting up a mirror so that we can see how ugly we are, but it is God putting up a mirror so that we can see what he's doing and what he wants to show us that needs to change and can change with his help. Powerful thing. So let's unpack this a little bit. Let's go into type A, the first type of soil, the path. The path is a well-trodden ground. It's the seed cannot sink in, so it gets stolen quickly by the birds of evil in the explanation, which I think includes the demonic, the devil. Do not doubt that that exists. We can go into that in another sermon. Brokenness is another way of evil, as well as bad habits that serve for evil effect in our lives. So I'm not going to talk about habits again. I've already done that. Habits cannot be killed. They have to be starved to death. So what are you feeding? What am I feeding in my life? They have to be overwhelmed by a better and stronger habit. Guy came to see me for counseling once. I'm sitting in the session and we're having a chat, and in that moment I get a word of wisdom. You know, it just flashes into my head. God says to him, stop the process right here. Tell him that he should buy a car and make that his habit to build up this car, an old car. I go, what the heck is this? Weirdest counseling advice I've ever given to anybody. In the moment you say I need to stop the process, I'm still fishing for what's happening here. God says, do it. And now I say that, the guy starts crying. I say, what is it? He says, man, this problem that I have with porn, you telling me that I have to create new habits and so on, the thing that I like most to do is to build up old cars. I said, whoa, okay, so God is telling you to build a new habit to make it stronger than that old habit. Let it die. Sorry that I'm hammering on porn, but it is a thing that men, especially in our world, struggle with a lot nowadays. And no longer even just men. It's one of the most prevalent. But, I mean, there's so many other things. Screen time. There's so many addictions in our world. Addictions are often called emotional painkillers. It actually means there's something off. Something hurts. And so I need some kind of drug called addictions. If that's you and you need some prayer this morning, we're going to pray afterwards. Most welcome. Let's go into it. Second type. Rocky places. Seeds germinate, but roots quickly run into rocks beneath the surface. Rocks can be deeper issues of trauma, betrayal, abuse, and deep wounds. The kind of rocks that require safe community like this, with God and with others, and forgiveness to remove. This thing about forgiveness is crucial. Let's quickly talk about that for a moment. You can see the example there of a pumpkin. So when I grew up, I heard about farmers in the Lowveld in South Africa, where they grow fruit and veg, who has problems with chakma baboons. If you grow up in South Africa, chakma baboon is the thing, the male baboons are about this high. They are quite vicious. So their eye teeth is longer than that of a leopard. And so these things, you don't play with them. And so on farms, they can be quite destructive if you have a fruit and veg farm, especially with the veggies. And they love pumpkins almost more than anything else. And they would destroy the pumpkins unless some farmers figured out, if you cut a hole in a pumpkin, one of those very big pumpkins, I mean, we're talking about a pumpkin that is this big, so it's quite heavy, it anchors you well, cuts a hole into it, the baboons come, they put their hands into the pumpkin and they love the pips. For some reason, that's their favorite thing. And then they try to extract their hand, but they're stuck to the pumpkin. And they will not let go for 3 days. And you can imagine what happens then. The farmer who is alert, who, you know, he takes the necessary actions to remove said plague from his farm. I won't go into that in any detail. I've heard the story a number of times. This is how the whole deal of forgiveness works. So other people do things in our lives and we take offense, and it's like they dump a pumpkin into our life and we go, yes, pips. And then we start carrying these pumpkins. And then somebody else at work does something and I take offense and I have another pumpkin, and now I've become a cereal pumpkin carrier. And I wonder why I'm sweating like crazy as I go through life, but I'm a pumpkin carrier, man. And I'm growing muscles. No, no, no. You're tightening up and you're going to tear muscles. It's a different deal. God says in the Word over and over again, Matthew 6:14, He says, if you do not forgive, you will not be forgiven. What is that? Lord, are you that mean? No, no, no. What that means is if you want to carry the pumpkins, you're going to feel the effect of it. So if you forgive, basically, you're not saying a pumpkin is no longer a bad thing. You're giving it away. You're no longer carrying it. That's what forgiveness really is. Let go of the pumpkins. Nobody wants to be a pumpkin carrier. Nobody wants to do that. Let's go into number three. Remember the pumpkins and let them go. It's worth it. Number three, thorns are in essence worries, anxieties, concerns, even about wealth and money. They eat away my life energy. If you've ever seen a person, I had this experience once, and I kid you not, I had a mentor in my early days in ministry who was a missionary. He was a powerful man of God. And so I talked to him once about something I was worried about, and he said, okay, pause. He says, there's something we need to do. I said, what is it? He says, I want you to worry with me for a minute. So I looked at him, well, that's a funny thing. And so he starts going like this, like kid you not, he says. I thought, what the heck is this? So, and it goes for a whole minute. I mean, by now, I'm highly embarrassed. I'm starting to get the point slow, but yes, I got it. He opens his eyes after a minute. He says, so how much has changed? Get the message. The answer is wheat and feed, which is a wonderful thing that you only get in Australia. I haven't seen it anywhere else. Wheat and feed. Feed with intimacy with God. If you feed with these kind of things, He keeps growing bigger in my mind than whatever is bothering me. His love drives out all fear. The Bible is very clear about it. Perfect love drives out all fear. Where do you get this perfect love? From God. From intimacy with God. Without that, it's not going to get there. Spiritual disciplines that weed what chokes and feed what grows trust in God. Michael Lunig is an Australian poet. He writes the most amazing poems. He wrote a poem that goes like this. The name of the poem is Love and Fear. So he says there's only actually two emotions, love and fear. Negative emotions are all fear-based in some way, shape, or form. Positive emotions are all love-based in some way, shape, or form. I think I agree with him. He says this, there are only two feelings, love and fear. There are only two languages, love and fear. There are only two activities, love and fear. There are only two motives, two procedures, two frameworks, two results, love and fear. Two results, love and fear. So weed and feed. Last soil type, and then we're going to finish it off. Good soil. As we do this deep work with God, in that soundproof room with Him, something happens. He starts to recover our bad soil with us and make it good. We grow in spiritual maturity, and we continue to become better soil that can produce an even higher yield harvest than 100-fold. Like mustard seed. Like leaven. Amazing. So continue tilling the soil. Fertilize the heck out of it. I couldn't help it. I had to put those words in there. To increase yield. Fertilize how? Jesus said, that's one way. There's others as well. But Jesus said, my food, my fertilizer is to do the will of Him who sent me. Who sent me. Intimacy with God, spiritual disciplines, journeying with God, community of believers. That's why it's so important to be here. We are coals that lie together, that ignite one another. If you take a coal out of a fire, what happens? It dies off. That's why community is so important. We're at the last words. And I think let's ask our music team to come up as I do this part. Thanks, Beanie. Is my life showing a harvest? Character, obedience, love, freedom, service, Christ-like behaviors, and the list goes on. If not, it doesn't mean it's game over. It doesn't mean the seed is bad. It doesn't mean there's a problem with, it does mean there's a problem with soil. And so now we need to tend the soil with God and with one another.